Hey, I'm Brian Gibberman with the Podium Game Podcast, and this is the Hawks-Nets part of the playoff preview we're putting together. We've already hit on Cavs-Celtics. We've also touched on Bulls-Bucks. Now we're going to head to the 1-8 seed in the Hawks versus the Nets. The Hawks swept the Nets in the regular season and won 3 of the games by a healthy margin. Game 1, 5:30 p.m. Sunday night on TNT. Rabbi Callen from HP and also does some college football stuff for fanbuzz.com. Robbie, how you doing today?
Doing well, Brian.
I've only seen like 2 of the Fast and Furious movies. Will you continue to do this podcast?
Begrudgingly.
Okay, thank you. Much appreciated. How big from a basketball context is the Thabo Sefolosha injury to what the Hawks are trying to accomplish in the postseason?
It's pretty big. Their defensive rating with him on the floor is vastly better than when he's off of it. I don't think the Nets particularly are the team that's going to be a problem, and I don't think any of the teams they really face in the second round would be the problem. The concern would be you really need 2 wing defenders that can rotate out when you face LeBron James. And Damari Carroll is good. Thabo is a little better defensively than Damari, I think. And not having Thabo to really be able to help on LeBron, I think that's the series that really catches up to them. Especially because Damari's going to log heavy minutes all series. Because Baze, as good as Bazemore's been, he really can't take the physical forwards the same way. Thabo was a big guy. You know, Baze is super long and can contain guards, but he can get beat up in the post. Thabo is really good at that, and I think that's the series where it really catches up to him. And then Toronto, honestly, it could be a little tricky with DeMar as well, but I think they could get past that. But really, I think once you get to the Eastern Conference Finals, there's really going to, If they get there and they face the Cavs, I think that's where you'd really see them miss Thabo the most.
The other injury issue going on with Atlanta right now, Paul Millsap, he played in the last regular season game. How'd he look, and was it good enough for you to have confidence in him going into the playoffs?
I think it's going to take a couple games for him to really get comfortable. He's wearing that one of those compression sleeve shirts to kind of cover up that right shoulder, and he didn't look super comfortable shooting with it, but I think that's something that'll come with a little game experience. I know at one point he's like 1-7 from the field, but he's knocking the rust off. I think he'll get used to that shirt over the next few days. And from a general health standpoint, from what I understand, is it's just more dealing with soreness than it is an actual structural injury. It's more of a soreness and whether he can deal with that, which Paul's one of the toughest guys on the team. And so I don't see him being limited too much by that. And so I think he'll be fine, but those first couple games, he might not be as efficient shooting the ball. You might not see him take as many threes early in this Net series. You might see him look to pump and drive a little more because he's not quite as comfortable shooting with that compression shirt.
I asked this in the Western Conference about the Grizzlies. I feel like it's appropriate here, too, though. Was the drop-off in the Hawks' play from where they were scorching hot, one clearly one of the best teams in the league to start the year and for a good chunk of the season, more based around the injuries they've had? Or was it just maybe a little bit of complacency and you expect that to round into form now?
Yeah, I think it's a little mixture of both. I mean, they got banged up. Teague missed a few games. Millsap's missed a few games. Obviously, Thabo. There's been a lot of guys that have missed time. Mike Scott, honestly, I think people forget how important Mike Scott is to this team. From just bringing offense off the bench, he's one of the few guys on the team that's really a scorer from that bench unit. You know, you have Dennis and you have Mike. And then you have some other guys who are not going to be able to take any kind of load as a primary scorer, but Mike Scott can do that. And so missing him for extended time I think that really hurt, and he's back, and he looks good. You know, I think it's a little combination, but at the same time, I think there is a little concern about how they were playing, a little concern about maybe just general fatigue from the season setting in. And you can rest guys all you want, but there's always going to be a little tired legs in the playoffs. And for a team that's so, especially defensively, is where you saw the slippage. And part of that's Thabo being out. But you saw some slippage because I think they got a little tired. And this is a team that hedges hard on pick and rolls and does a lot of chasing back and hard rotations around the court. And I think that it takes a little bit of a toll. We'll see if they can pick it back up in the playoffs.
You guys going to be nice to Joe Johnson or me?
The team or the fans?
The fans.
Oh, they're going to boo the hell out of him, which I hate.
They really don't. Why do they hold it against him?
They shouldn't. As I've said, just generally, fans are dumb. This isn't a shot at Atlanta fans. This is just generally fans just aren't really good at looking any deeper than the surface level. And so they see a guy who got hella paid and think he wasn't worth it and are going to lash out at him. Now, is it his fault? No. Talk to Billy. Talk to Billy Knight about that. Okay? That's who you need to be mad at. Talk to Billy Knight about some of those contracts. Here's the thing. If someone signs a contract in front of you and it's going to overpay you, you don't say no. You know, like, all right, you're going to pay me $120 million to play basketball? Am I worth $120 million? Maybe not, but apparently on the market I am. Joe Johnson is a top five player in franchise history. He's the best shooting guard in franchise history. He's a guy that whenever he decides to retire, after the appropriate length of time, whatever that is, that number two should be hanging in the rafters at Phillips Arena. He is probably the biggest reason that the team was able to make the transition from horrible, awful, terrible 13-69 to, along with some other pieces that came in, to becoming a perennial playoff team in the longest playoff streak in the Eastern Conference. He carried those early teams. That 2008 playoff series was Joe. 2009, Joe. 2010, Joe. That's when, and then you started to see Josh and Al kind of coming around. But I mean, he was phenomenal in Atlanta, and he gets a bad rep. He's not a superstar guy in personality, so I think he just kind of gets a rap as not being a superstar, but the dude was one of the two or three best shooting guards in the league for a long time, you know? He gets a bad rep. He's going to get booed. It's unfortunate. I hope they don't boo him too much. But every time he touches the ball, they're going to boo him.
All right, to wrap this up, you haven't really gotten to see a team play at this level for a whole season. What was it? What was fun about it for you getting to watch the success they had?
Oh, man, they just played such a fun brand of basketball. I think that's the difference for me is, you know, I've been in the arena for a ton of Hawks teams, and none of them played as good, consistently as good a brand of basketball as this. We saw some flashes of it last year, but they weren't putting it together on a nightly basis. Some of that was injury. But, I mean, this is a team that just 1 through 10, they come in and they all play. They play the system but once. They run the offense. They play hard on defense. They all can shoot. It's a really fun atmosphere to be in. They're all good guys. And it's just one of those things where it was very strange as a Hawks fan because even covering the Hawks because the team gets along really well and you feel that in the locker room. That's brand new. We hadn't seen that before. A bunch of guys actually wanted to hang out with each other. Joe and Josh just kind of did their own thing, which is fine, but it's interesting to see that. And it carried over on the court, and you saw it, and they were all, you know, it's sharing the ball. It's doing all this. It's incredibly fun, and to be honest, I don't really, what would be a disappointment for me would be if they stop playing that kind of basketball. If they play their style and they go out in the second round, then they go out in the second round. That's fine. To be honest, that, you know, it's if they tried to do something different, which they're not going to do. This season's been a success no matter what happens in the playoffs. I'd love to see them get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I'd love to see them possibly beat the Cavs, but to be honest, whatever happens, this has been the best Hawks season I've ever been a part of as a fan or covering a team.
No, that's a good attitude you have about it. And I've always been a person who's rooted for LeBron in the playoffs, but in the East this year, I'm rooting for the Hawks. I want to see you guys. It'd be cool if you guys were able to get out of that conference, even if it seems somewhat unlikely. From Atlanta, we head up the I-95 to talk about the Brooklyn Nets. David Wurzberger from brooklynsfinestblog.com, along with HP, has also done some work in some other places too. David, how you doing today?
I'm good, Brian. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. So, the Nets. Did you think they were going to get in as the season was ending?
Honestly, I expected them to blow it. I mean, they were down. I didn't watch the game, but they were down to Orlando for a good part of that. It just seemed very Nets of them. You know, that may sound unfair, but that's just how the season has gone. They have all this talent. They have Brook Lopez, who's just now starting to play out of his mind. They have former All-Stars, Darren Williams, Joe Johnson. Lionel Hollins has been known to be a good defensive coach and such, but, God, they seem to always find a way to disappoint their fan base.
Is there any, I mean, Hollins, and he does do some good things, but, like, he continues to play Jack and Darren Williams together. He continues to play Brook Lopez and Plumlee together for stretches. Do you think now that it's playoff time and it's winner go home and there's no other place to go that he kind of cleans up his lineups, or is he going to keep playing the stuff the data says isn't very good?
You know, to his credit, he's cut down on the Lopez Plumlee lineup in the second part in post All-Star break. The same with the Williams Jack lineup. He's still gone to it at times. There was one post-game injury where he said he'd stop going to Williams and Jack, but he did anyway. So, you know, I'd like to hope so, because the data really says those are horrible lineups. The eye test proves the same thing. Plumlee and Lopez just kill space, and Jack can't really defend anyone nowadays. So I'd like to see them go away. I feel like it'd be hopeful to think they would go away. I'm not sure how Hollins will approach this series, but if those lineups are a factor, the Hawks they already have such an advantage. Like, this would just make it a definite four-game sweep.
What is Keith Lopez's resurgence? Because he's been, won three straight Player of the Week awards or something like that, I think?
I believe so. What, the three or two?
Yeah, something like that. That doesn't matter. Just a stupid thing to bring up.
Yeah, the key to, I mean, getting to play with a guy like Thaddeus Young, who stretches the floor, changing the types of shots he's been looking for. A lot of his early season stuff was just isolating post-ups down low, not passing when the help came, and just trying to hit a hook shot over two guys. Even then, he was playing sort of passably, but now he's just been destroying on the pick and roll with Darren Williams, who's a lot more of a threat than Jared Jack there. So since Williams has come back, defenders have had to choose between letting Williams get a good look or Lopez get a good look, and Lopez has just knocked down that little in-between floater. He's finished well. He's getting his own offensive rebounds a lot. So he's taken on a bigger role with this Nets team with Kevin Garnett gone and Thad Young. Not much of an inside big man. You know, he's a stretch four, essentially. So Lopez has just been killing it down low. It's mostly been sort of these different things, Williams coming back and Young being inserted into the lineup, opening up these new opportunities for him.
How has Young fit in since the trade? It sounds like it's been pretty positive.
Considering the Nets' reputation for transactions, or rather I say general manager Billy King's reputation, the Young KG deal looks like one of the best trades of the season, because the Nets' offense, I don't have the exact numbers on me, but their offensive rating, every measurement possible, they have just jumped offensively since that Young trade, and since he's been inserted into the starting lineup, he stretches the floor, he can create. His defense and rebounding aren't fantastic, but offensively, the Nets were just so hard to watch throughout the season, and ever since he's come here, they've been
a lot easier to watch. You know, he's been knocking down threes, another pick and roll, pick and pop option with Darren Williams. So that was just a great trade for the Nets.
And Williams looks a little bit fresher lately, right? It seems like he's playing better. This is the best stretch of hoops he's had this season.
Yeah, it hasn't been a huge stretch. He's been really on and off. One game he'll look fantastic, the next not so much. He sat out a few games. I don't know if that's helped him sort of, you know, get some energy back. Him playing well is going to be key to the Nets in the series, because it's him or Jack or Darius Morris, I guess, if you want to count him. But
that's a good
honest.
Michigan man right there.
Sorry, I didn't mean to insult, but he's been... Anyway, I'm going to go back to Williams now before you kick me off this call.
No, you're allowed to insult Darius Morris. It's okay.
I don't mean to insult him. He's just not a very good point guard or basketball player. He still manages to get on these rosters, so I don't really feel bad about making fun of him because he's still making all this money. But, you know, Williams, he's really on and off. One night he'll look 40, the next he'll look back to being 25. There's no really pattern to the madness. It's just sort of how he's feeling. So honestly, it's another case of just hoping. There's really no way of telling how he does in the series.
Who do you think they have chase around Korver?
I'm actually writing a little preview in which I list three keys and three certainties. One of the certainties is that the Nets don't have anyone to change to chase Korver. He's going to absolutely destroy the Nets. I mean, Marco Brown right now is the starting two. I love him. He's young. He's feisty. He's scrappy. But chasing around Korver, he's not terrific going around screens. He is quick, and he can leap. He's blocked a few jumpers. I'd like to see him try and chase Korver, but if he's the Nets' best option, which it looks like he is, I mean, Allen Anderson and Bojan Bogdanović, they aren't fast. Neither is Joe Johnson. You know, the Nets point guards don't. That might be a scenario where Hollins might look and say, "Oh, we should do Williams and Jack." But that's not. That's probably not going to do it either, because neither of those guys are super quick and they won't have the length or height to really get up in Korver's face, which hasn't even done anything this season because Korver's shooting the lights out. So it's going to be Brown. It's not going to be pretty.
It sounds like a job maybe 3 years down the road. Brown might be a little bit more equipped for, but not in his rookie year.
That yeah, absolutely.
He has the physical tools, but the mind just isn't there yet for a seven-game playoff series against a team run by a Spurs veteran coach.
Well, now, let's not kid ourselves. This isn't going to seven.
Yeah. Okay, good good point. I have one friend who is a Nets fan. I grew up in New York my whole life. I know one person. And he is so excited that they made the playoffs. I was like, dude, really? This is...
I mean... The Nets aren't keeping their pick anyway, so might as well.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, it doesn't. There was no reason for them not to go for it, but there's also no really reason to get all pumped up and fired up for this series.
It's gonna hurt. It's not gonna be pretty if you're a Nets fan.
Oh, 4.5 over under.
I'm gonna go over. I think the Nets will squeak out one because they can have one of those games where they just get hot. I went to a Nets Warriors game this year, and the Nets ended up winning that one, and it was just because nobody would miss. I mean, Jared Jackson's going to have a 25 point game in the series. I'm certain of that, despite the season he's had. He seems to always have that one game. He's just going to make every mid range jumper. Then that's a win one, I think.
All right, you snuck one plug in. You got anything else you want to get out there?
No. I mean, you know, feel free to log onto the blogs. You know, read about the Nets if you must. If you want to read about the Nets, I might, you know, suggest that you reevaluate some things. But, you know, if you do want to read about the Nets, you should come check it out.
Well, that was a superb way of telling people not to go to your website. Well done. Go to brooklynsfinestblog.com to check out everything, your latest news for the Nets. That's a part of the ESPN True Hoop Network. David, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.